All right, immigration expert Mark Krikorian joins us now. He's the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, good morning. Nice to have you back on Mornings on the Mall.
Good morning.
Sir, there's a developing debate going on in Washington. We're looking at potentially another government shutdown in under 3 weeks in the event that lawmakers can't reach a conclusion on what the DACA deal is. What is the DACA deal at this moment as you understand it? Where is it headed?
Well, I mean, there's multiple versions of it. They range from the bill that Judiciary Chairman Goodlatte in the House has introduced with some other top members of the House, which would give legal status to the people who actually have DACA, so it's a limited population. It doesn't open a whole new can of worms with a new amnesty, but has all of the measures that the White House insists on, plus some more. So it ends chain migration, ends the visa lottery, funds the wall, but also mandates the E-Verify system
right, to
help weaken the jobs magnet. Anyway, that's sort of one end. And then the other end, you have the Senate Gang of Six proposal, which was never really introduced as a bill, but was really terrible because it would start a whole new amnesty, potentially legalize not just the people with DACA, but all kinds of other people who could have had DACA but just chose not to sign up for it,
right,
and amnesty their parents, and create another amnesty program for the people who were here on so-called temporary protected status. Sort of, you know, that's kind of the other end, and so the question is, where in which of those or which in between will the Senate and House settle on, if anything?
Right. And the White House has called that Graham Durbin bill both dishonest and dead on arrival.
Right.
The White House, though, has been saying other things that I want to bounce off of you, which is to say that there's talk of up to 1.2 million now getting amnesty, meaning including people who would have been eligible for DACA but never applied. And the White House considering opening up an amnesty to up to 1.2 million people at least as a part of this deal. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, presumably this is what the negotiations are about. Part of it, there's two important questions. One is how many people are going to be included in the amnesty? And the second is what are the balancing measures, the offsetting measures that will be added to the package? The kinds of things I talked about, the wall and E-Verify and chain migration. So, I'm not too worried that they're talking about that kind of increase in the size of the number of people getting it if there's also progress on increasing the offsetting measures and, say, adding E-Verify to the president's list of non-negotiables, which includes chain migration and the lottery and border funding.
We know that the Republican Study Committee has announced that they're endorsing the Securing America's Future Act, also known as the Goodlatte Bill.
Right.
Do you think that that has any chance of going anywhere? I mean, maybe passing this House, but will it make its way through the Senate?
Well, I mean, I think ideally it would be passed by the House because there's no reason the House should wait for the Senate to pass an immigration bill. It's not like the Constitution says all immigration bills have to originate in the Senate. The House should step forward with a tough, strong bill so that if the Senate passes something of its own, which will be weaker, at least the House will be in a strong position when they get together and negotiate about what the common bill should be.
I want to ask you about your immigration priorities, because you've followed this very closely for a long time. And I keep hearing members of Congress kind of reference the fact that they want border security in exchange for DACA. People speak sort of in broad strokes. Is border security the top priority on your list? Say the list. Let's just look at the list of three things the White House has mentioned, which is chain migration, diversity visa lottery ending, or border security. Which one's the highest priority for you?
For me, probably the long-term impact would be greatest from ending chain migration, because what that does by changing the categories of family relationship that you can sponsor immigrants for, it would have a much long-term impact, because chain migration basically has taken over our whole immigration system, where yesterday's immigrants are the ones who just decide who tomorrow's immigrants are going to be instead of government policy.
And what's the practical effect of that, Mark, is that these are all people who are receiving visas, right? And having a visa, how quickly does that allow you to become a citizen of the United States?
Well, Well, I mean, it's a complicated thing. It depends on what happens. But if you get a green card, which is you're a legal permanent resident, you get a visa to come here to get that green card, then usually after 5 years, you can become a citizen. And you have to take a test and what have you, but it's not all that difficult. So within 5 years, you can start start sponsoring relatives. In fact, even before that, there are certain categories of relatives you can sponsor, even with just a green card. So what happens is, you remember, there was an ad years ago, I don't know how many of your listeners remember, you guys are probably too young, for shampoo. And it was, a woman said, this is a great shampoo, tell two friends, they'll tell two friends, they'll tell two friends. And the pictures multiplied on the screen. Well, that's what chain migration is. You have people sponsoring their relatives. Those relatives can sponsor more relatives. That really, for me, is job number one, ending that.
Wait, so chain migration is a pyramid scheme, but it involves a product people actually want.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it never ends.
Yeah. Mark, the question that I think a lot of us have, I know I have, is what's to stop someone who's here illegally, who came here last month over the border illegally, stepping up and going, oh, I'm a DACA. I qualify for DACA. My parents brought me here 10 years ago, and I'm only 24. They're really 34, or however old they are. Is there any kind of proof needed?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is, but that's a really good question. How do you avoid fraud? Anything like this that's popular is going to have people trying to defraud it, and some of them will succeed and some of them will fail, and the question is, how do you minimize it? You know, when Obama's people were running DACA, this really stuck in my mind, one of the pieces of evidence they accepted to show that you lived here a certain, you know, that you entered before X date, was your data from your Xbox usage, video game usage, showing that you had been here before this date using your video game console.
Oh,
I mean, I'm not sure there's any good way to limit the fraud. And we found 30 years ago, under that Reagan amnesty, which supposedly was the last one we were ever going to have, there were people claiming to be farm workers, for instance, who actually got green cards, who had said things like, they were asking them questions. They said, oh, you're a farm worker, what'd you pick? They said, well, we're watermelons. It's like the first thing somebody's came to mind. And they said, well, how'd you pick the watermelons? And they said, well, we picked them off the watermelon trees. that kind of thing. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, those people snuck through and fraudulently got green cards. So there's always the danger of fraud, and you've got to be very careful to limit it.
All right, Mark Krikorian, I don't know what tree we picked you up off of, but I'm glad we have you. Thanks for letting us know what's going on here. We'll make sure to check in with you as this debate moves along.
Thank you.